It's Tuesday, October 27th, and no matter where you are, you're on Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. This morning, I was reading a report about a new policy statement from the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is now urging policymakers to raise the minimum age for purchasing cigarettes and e-cigs as well. Doctors say if the legal age for buying cigarettes were raised to 21, smoking rates would fall to 12%, and the public health benefits would be 4.2 million fewer years of life lost, nearly a quarter million fewer premature deaths, and among the population born between 2000 and 2019, 50,000 fewer deaths from lung cancer. If policymakers were to raise the age for buying cigarettes from 18 to 21. But consider, if you will, just how unlikely such talk would have seemed back when the Surgeon General issued his report just over 50 years ago, making that definitive declaration on the link between smoking and lung cancer. Indeed, as late as 1960, only a third of all doctors actually believed in the link between cigarettes and cancer. The idea of cigarette smoke disappearing from everyday life, well, to many, it just seemed to be charitable, implausible. As difficult as it is to get into that mindset, think of the reaction to this morning's headlines, in which a World Health Organization panel of 22 experts declared that bacon, sausage, and other processed meats cause cancer, and that red meat probably does too. The $95 billion beef industry here in the U.S. has been preparing its response for months. They're now emphasizing the importance of a balanced diet, and not a few scientists, including some unaffiliated with the meat industry, have questioned whether the evidence is substantial enough to draw the conclusions that the WHO has. An example, Sanjay Gupta, CNN's go-to medical expert, says that whether we should cut processed meats from our diets largely depends on how much risk we are willing to assume. In other words, whether or not we can live without our hot dogs. But as we digest this report for ourselves, it is hard to overlook what history tells us about personal risk assumption versus changes in public policy. Joining us now is Dr. Shreela Sharma. She is Associate Professor of Epidemiology, Human Genetics, and Environmental Sciences at the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston. Dr. Sharma, thanks for your time.
Good morning. Thank you.
We hear about medical studies all the time. I mean, this is not the first time, certainly, that I have heard about this connection between meat and cancer. You know, this is good for you. This is bad for you. This is not so bad for you. Mm-hmm. Is the World Health Organization announcement just another warning, or is this more like that 64 Surgeon General's report?
I think I would say it's probably closer to the Surgeon General's report, where we've had this evidence for a few years now, but we now have some of the strongest study designs that have been used in this particular report that point out the health issues with regard, specifically risk of cancer with regards to consuming processed meat. So it's a strong body of evidence that's pushing us in to this conclusion, which needs to be taken seriously.
Well, so how, I mean, but it's funny because, you know, you think about, say, warning labels on bacon, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, and to a lot of people, that sounds silly right now. How far out are we from something like that? Or more seriously, you know, policies about school lunches and the pressure that's going to come almost inevitably there. At what point does public policy begin to become the center of the conversation?
I think we are not too far from that conversation. But having said that, you know, food is a little bit different from smoking, right? Smoking, you can stop and survive. But with food, you know, you have to eat to live. And we don't just eat because we're hungry. We also eat because we like the taste of certain foods. So it's a little bit of a different conversation as compared to smoking. Also, when it comes to policy, there is a little bit of moderation that needs to be taken into consideration. So while maybe you don't want to, there is no recommendation right now that you should stop eating red meat completely, but there is the report does suggest that, you know, there is a risk associated with consuming large portions of processed meat and as well as red meat, and especially There's some suggestion with regards to how you cook these meats. So as more evidence comes in this area, the conversation will definitely shift from just individual choice towards more policy recommendations.
Dr. Sharma, if you are, if you're the head of a household and you're trying to figure out what do I do now, do I stop buying the bacon? Who do you know to turn to for the best advice? How I feel like, in a way, we're in this odd sort of nether region of opinion. It's just sort of hard to tell what our next step should be as just trying to live our lives.
Right. Well, the science is in front of us with regards to the increased risk. So if you are, I have kids and I have a family and I have to make these choices every day for them. And my number one question is, what are the nutritional benefits of eating this food? In addition to, will my family eat it? So if the answer to the first question is not only are there no nutritional benefits, but it's going to increase the risk of particular diseases, then I would defer to probably stay away from them. But having said that, again, food is a slightly different conversation because there's taste involved,
yes.
Right?
And this conversation is far from over, obviously. Dr. Srila Sharma, Associate Professor of Epidemiology, Human Genetics, Environmental Sciences at UT Health Science Center, Houston. Thank you so much.
Thank you.